Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. We have the final, I believe, it will be the final segment in our string of episodes covering Andrew Jackson's veto towards the Cumberland Road improvements, or whatever that bill is. We'll get into it. There's just so many, I don't keep track of them. One of the things I learned as an intelligence analyst was don't commit to memory everything. Because what happens is when you're looking, because I used to look at different things, let's say aircraft, and you would look at that aircraft, and if you committed it to memory, then you would make the call every time on base what you remember. One of the things I learned is I was very good, but I, instead of committing to memory, I knew exactly how to break down the plane, break down the ship or what have you, and go straight to the specific keys necessary to actually identify the model, variant, and so forth. That way, when you commit to memory, you may miss something that you just actually do a miscall because you were sure that it was this instead of, you know, actually verifying the unique differences. Now, you get good where you don't have to use the keys as much. In other words, you kind of commit to memory. But a lot of times, it's still important to verify, do the due diligence in verify. But it all depends on the type of work you're doing as well. If you are doing immediate type of, you've got to get that analysis out immediately, because remember, intelligence has no value if it's not on time. And so if you're doing indications and warnings, and there's a specific type of, you know, bear that is missing from a very specific airfield, then you would need to report that. And you know where you're looking and so forth. So you would know, you know, okay, we're missing this many bears. And so, anywho, if you're doing that type of analysis, then okay, I get it. You've got to be immediate. You need to use your memory, and you need to use, you know, there's other factors to help really clarify what you're looking at. So I'm just not trying to broad brush this, but way too many people take, you know, a real quick shot at saying something, and you have a higher propensity of being wrong. And I like being right. So that's why if I don't know very specifically verbatim the name of the bill, and that, we won't go through it again today because I've already gone through it, then, you know, it's reported or provided at that point in time. The fact is, this is the 1830 veto of the attempt by Congress to create a Department of Transportation. And in the same vein as James Madison and James Monroe, it's pretty easy to see that those two presidents clearly just stated there is no authority within the Constitution delegated to us to be able to do this. Now, Andrew Jackson, being a lawyer, obviously was setting up the opportunity of precedence and looking at other connections. Now, as we left off yesterday, we'll get into where we left off yesterday. I'll reread that paragraph. But before we do, I feel amiss if I do not remind you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this still is the only show. There's probably not going to be ever any other show that's going to really get into the solutions, because by that time we won't have time. Pretty soon, shows like this that are actually providing you this type of information get shut down if we continue to go down this path. Now, how much time do we have? I'm telling you, I believe the Bolshevik Revolution starts around 2024. And that's strictly because of the demographics. I have an image, and maybe I should put that image on the Moby Strip Press Facebook page, and then I'll put it up on the website. I just got to hire a new IT guy because the guy that's doing all my IT is failing me. Anyway, the point is that what happens when the progressives take control? You got to remember that they are not open to hearing conflicting arguments, conflicting narratives, and so forth. They especially do not like when you point out their fallacies and the empirical data that blows them out of the water. That's precisely why they silence, they censor, and they do whatever is necessary. Because remember, the ends justify the means. They do whatever is necessary to ensure that their objectives are being met. So, when they start taking greater and greater control, that's why when Obama was in, he wanted to actually start shutting down conservative talk radio and these other narratives that were countering what he was trying to do. He considered, and they do, they consider us dangerous because we are the enemy. And it's a natural, these are natural enemy relationships. And what I mean by that is that we're opposites. Just like within nature, you've got negative and positive. You've got the different spectrums, you know, of frequencies of light and so forth from one end to the next. And the point is that there will always be these opposites. There will always be these conflicts, especially in ideologies. And they're trying to eradicate their... by using force, by using censorship, they're trying to eradicate the opposition to their narrative. What we like to do, or at least what I like to do, is I like to put out their narrative and then provide the empirical data that proves that theirs is a dangerous path. And if you look historically, what they do is they silence those who have the broader understanding. Thomas Sowell points this out in Intellectuals and Society. There's plenty of other evidence that even Ludwig von Mises, he actually points this out in his book, Socialism. And you can see how they use very extreme measures to ensure that nobody can expose them. And if you look at Pol Pot, that's what Pol Pot did. Pol Pot went straight after, and he killed millions of people, but he went straight after those with education because they had a good breadth of background and would be able to point out and identify the evils of their ways. And so I'm just here to tell you that eventually people that are espousing a counter-narrative, especially those who have and got a good grasp on the truth and the solutions, they are the greatest threat to them because people start understanding, I go back to my comparison I like to do with Stefan Bantu-Biko and Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela had been in prison for a long time, longer than Stefan Bantu-Biko. And when Stefan Bantu-Biko was arrested, and this was like in the 1977, when he was arrested. And he had already engaged on intellectual thought, and nobody could really shut him down. And so if you've never seen the movie... I'll have to look it up, but there's a good movie on Biko, and the reason they shut him down because they realized he was a real threat. He wasn't somebody that they can control and they could still operate under, the communist, globalist, what have you, which is why they never perceived Mandela as a threat. Mandela wasn't espousing liberty. Mandela was a socialist. He wanted controls. And so as long as they give you those controls, then you're beholden to them. But Biko didn't want control. He wanted to free the people. And so when you watch the movie, you can kind of see the difference. Even though they were both fighting for a liberation from the apartheid, there was a huge difference because Mandela was fighting for control like a civil war, and Biko was fighting for liberty, individual liberty and individual sovereignty, which was a revolution. And so, remember, civil wars are two factions fighting for control over the same thing. And a revolution is where you were actually trying to take a completely different direction, not control, but, you know, to cast off the oppressors that have you and then to free yourselves. Very similar to the American Revolution. So anyway, one of the things we're going to get into after we finish this, I'm sorry for the long diatribe. I started going down these paths and want to try to paint a good picture for you so you can kind of see. And anyway, sorry. We're going to get into the cod fishery bounties because this is where Madison really goes into detail regarding the general welfare clause, the general defense and welfare clause, and the dangers of this clause, especially by using taxation. When we get back, we'll talk about the listen line number that you were going to want to plug into your phone, because if you haven't noticed, we are already providing you a lot of really good information. And why would you want to miss this? Even though you can get the podcast, why would you want to miss this? Anyway, we've got these two promos. We'll be right back after these two promos, and then we'll dive into Andrew Jackson's veto. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. If you have not checked out the new video, we actually had a Hanarchy Creations or Hanarchy Animations or whatever. Forgive me, but the credits are on the video. If you go to Reclaiming the Republic on YouTube or reclaimingtherepublic.org, on our Take Action page, we actually have a link to it because I get it. There's a lot of people that don't use Flash anymore. and it's dying in the browser world. So if you don't want to watch it on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, it is on Reclaiming the Republic on YouTube. And so you can go watch that video. It's a six-minute video. Actually, it's five minutes something. The credits take a little time. And anyway, that was done by a teenager who was given a script, but the artwork and everything else and the telling of the story is done by Hannity. And so, or Hannah, I'm sorry, not Hannity. Hanarchy Creations is, I think, the business she wants to create in doing those types of things. But anywho, I think that this is a really good introduction kind of overview of how and what Republic Review is and its role in our constitutional framework. Anyway, go check it out. Let us know what you think. The listen line to call in is 605-562-4209. And so let me get into the quick obligatories. And in doing that, I'll just really try to quickly tell you that you can buy your Red State coffee. Just go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. That's where you'll find the link to that, as well as our GoFundMe crowdfunding campaign. We need your help. We need you to get involved. It does not take much to get smart on the Constitution so that you can point out how your servants, your public servants, are failing you and how you can actually go do the job. We're here to help. Send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And believe me, we may be overwhelmed with all sorts of things. You are that important to us, and we want to make sure we support you because we need real constitutional champions in our state legislators this coming 2020. So start planning on it. If you're afraid on the finances and everything else, go look. You'll find that it doesn't cost that much, and you should be able to get the financing you need. If you're not involved in the Republican Party, go get your butt involved in the Republican Party, because getting the endorsements and that type of thing will help you get that money as well. We'll talk about this in the upcoming weeks so that we can actually start helping you start strategizing and planning on how you can actually make a difference by getting involved, and it's never too late. Thank you for tuning in. We do appreciate everybody that's been tuning in and helping us grow this show. We need you to continue to, you know, on a weekly basis, try to target a new person to say, hey, check out this show. Tell me what you think of this. Tell me what you think of this concept of actually taking control of our Constitution again. And so what we're here to do is we're here to help you in getting this message out, because the more people that get this and the more people that in your area that understand this, the easier it will be for you to get support. So with that, let me just kind of dive into where we left off, because let me see here. We still have a good 2 pages left. Is that right? About 2 pages left. And this is the last paragraph that I read yesterday. But I do not entertain such gloomy apprehensions. If it to be the wish of the people that the construction of roads and canals should be conducted by the federal government. It is, and so you got to understand what he's saying here. He's talking about a democracy, a wish of the people, not a wish of the states, because we are a constitutional republic. It is the people of the states, not the people in general, as a democracy. So I don't think Andrew Jackson understood that. I think he, obviously being a Democrat, he was far more attuned towards democracy than republicanism, even though he used the words of republic and so forth. But anyway, if it be the wish of the people that construction of roads and canals should be conducted by the federal government, it is not only highly expedient, but indispensably necessary that a previous amendment of the Constitution delegating the necessary power and defining the restriction or defining and restricting its exercise with reference to the sovereignty of the states should be made. Without it, nothing extensively can be useful or extensively useful can be affected. The right to exercise as much jurisdiction as is necessary to preserve the works and to raise the funds by the collection of tolls to keep them in repair cannot be dispensed with. The Cumberland Road should be an instructive admonition of the consequences of acting without this right. Year after year, contests are witnessed growing out of the efforts to obtain the necessary appropriations for completing and repairing this useful work. Whilst one Congress may claim and exercise the power, a succeeding one may deny it. And this fluctuation of opinion must be... this is what kills me. This fluctuation of opinion to any scheme from which its extent would promote the interest and elevate the character of the country, the experience of the past has shown that the opinion of Congress is subject to such fluctuations. Well, Congress doesn't have the power to fluctuate. They only have the specific power that the federal government has delegated them. Or not the federal government. The states have delegated to the federal government. And so the whole point here is that the federal government has to stay within the boundaries. And we've had a huge fluctuation of, let's just say, what Congress believes they can do because they are way out of line. And that's what's really scary, folks. They believe that they have the power to discern what they want to do and what they don't want to do. And here, Andrew Jackson isn't even calling them out to saying, hey, they're crossing the line every time they have this fluctuation of assuming these powers, because those are unconstitutional powers. It's either there or not. And it's almost like his cavalier attitude of this is how it is. And it's unacceptable. And as a president, he should not be allowing it, just like James Madison wasn't allowing it. And I believe that Andrew Jackson just wasn't getting it. If it be the desire of the people that the agency of the federal government should be confined to the appropriation of money in aid of such undertakings in virtue of state authorities, then the occasion, the manner, and the extent of the appropriation should be made the subject of constitutional regulation. This is the more necessary in order that they may equitably among the several states promote harmony between different sections of the Union and their representatives, preserve their parts of the Constitution from being undermined by the exercise of doubtful powers or the too great extension of those which are not, and protect the whole subject against the deleterious influence of combinations to carry by concert measures, which considers themselves might meet but little continence. Now, it's interesting the words that they use, but here's the point I want to bring up out of this one paragraph. He's talking about just promoting their ability to create these roads to all these different states. Well, some states would need more help than others, and it's not by appropriation. See, the taxation and the how each state is supposed to be getting, you know, any type of assistance from the government has to be uniform in kind. In other words, if you look at the Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 1, the federal government is required to be uniform in how it applies its both its burdens and its blessings. Let's say it all of a sudden realizes it's got a glut of money and that money came from the people and it needs to give that money back. It needs to give that money back by the appropriation standards that they've already established in the taxation. So in other words, they don't have the ability to spend a lot of extra money on a brand new state when they never spent that money on any of the older states. And so this is how they start deviating from the actual intent of a general government being blind and being limited so that it can't provide any extra gains to one specific state over another. They're supposed to be completely neutral on this. Anyway, that a constitutional adjustment of this power upon equitable principles is the highest degree desirable can scarcely be doubted, nor can it fail to be promoted by every sincere friend of the success of our political institutions. In no government are appeals to the source of power in cases of real doubt more suitable than in ours. No good motive, and there we go, we're heading into another break. So we're going to come back with no good motive as soon as we come back from these two promos. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. So thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so Mr. Jackson, President Jackson, is saying no good motive can be assigned for the exercise of power by the constituted authorities while those for whose benefit it is to be executed have not conferred it and may not be willing to confer it. So who confers the power? Is it the people or is it the states? Now see, let's go into, because I'm going to do this real quick, I'm going to try to go on this tangent real quick, because I talk to people all the time about how the country is swinging towards socialism. Yes, there may be a huge majority of those people, and in 2024 will probably hit critical mass where they will be finally at a level of a percentage of the people of the United States. What they will then hit, and they'll try to start their Bolshevik Revolution in 2024, what they will hit is they will hit the reality that we are a republic and that seven states with the majority of all the people in the United States that, the majority of those people in those states feel that they need to make these changes, and they will realize that there's all these flyover states that have an equal voice.
because it's not about the voice of the people. It is the voice of the people of the states, or just the voice of the states, because you need you need 38 states to be able to move the Constitution in one direction or another. And so that's why we need to get this message of Republic Review into the hands of these states, so that they recognize that they have the authority to stop the lunacy of the Bolshevik Revolution. Even if we don't even get Republic Review engaged completely, when the when the warning signs present themselves that a democracy wants to set aside the Constitution, there should be enough states. You only need 13, but we should have more than 13 states that will stand up and say, "We're sorry. That's not your Constitution. It's ours, and you need 38 states to move this Constitution in that direction." This is one of the reasons why I'm a huge advocate for the splitting up of these blue states, especially New York, Washington, California, and so forth, because in splitting them up, you create a neutrality of the blue state itself. Even though, let's look at Washington and Oregon. If those two states split, you will have, instead of a blue state, you'll have a new red state that counters that blue state specifically. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's okay. There you go. Now you start understanding it's one for one when it comes to states, not 5 million to 50 million from Washington or Oregon in contrast to California. It is one to one in a Republican form of government. Anyway, moving on. It would seem to me that an honest application of the conceded powers of the general government to the advancement of the common weal, W-E-A-L, present a sufficient scope to satisfy a reasonable ambition. The difficulty and supposed impracticability of obtaining an amendment of the Constitution in this respect is, I firmly believe, in a great degree unfounded. The time has never yet been when the patriotism and the intelligence of the American people were not fully equal to the greatest exigency, and it never will when the subject calling for their interposition is plainly presented to them. To do so with the questions involved in this bill and to urge them to an early, zealous, and full consideration of their deep importance is, my estimation, among the highest of our duties. A supposed connection between appropriations for internal improvements and the system of protecting duties growing out of the anxieties for those more immediately interested in their success has given rise to the suggestion what it is proper I should notice on this occasion. My opinions on these subjects have never been concealed from those who had a right to know them. Those which I have entertained on the latter have frequently placed me in opposition to individuals as we communities whose claims upon my friendship and gratitude are of the strongest character. But I trust there has been nothing in my public life which has exposed me to the suspicion of being thought capable of sacrificing my views of duty in private considerations, however strong they may have been, or deep the regrets which they are capable of exciting. As long as the encouragement of domestic manufacturers is directed to national ends, it shall receive from me a temperate but steady support. This is kind of interesting, because I'm telling you, there is a complete lack of understanding the concept of the republic, republicanism, and the people, because he constantly has, throughout this, has always referred to the people and the amendments, but he has not referred to other factors of the Constitution, such as the uniformity and so forth. I mean, he should not even be entertaining any of these concepts of, you know, being able to provide roads for this state, for this state, for this state, and not all of them. They have to be done uniformly, period. That's the whole point of the uniformity clause. And like I said, that's Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 1. And if one looks at exactly how that lays out, this is what it says. The Congress shall have the power, and then subsection 1, to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and exercises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, let me ask you this. So most people say, well, it's just that the taxes have to be uniform. No. It means that the burdens have to be uniform. And so if the burdens of home or road improvements and so forth are greater in one state than they are in another, by easing those burdens, you have changed and relinquished the burdens from one state, but not the other. In other words, another state is not feeling the burdens. They're not getting the same kind of growth and economic, I don't want to use the word liberty, but in economic capabilities and economic resources and so forth. The intent is when you start, it's just the same thing as if I start paying your rent. If I pay a few people's rent and not everybody's rent, then I am not being uniform and I'm only giving advantages to one over the other. Great case in point, and I'll just use this because I've said this before, the TARP bailout. All that money went to New York. How come the banks in North Dakota and South Dakota weren't equally supported, and or the insurance companies in Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho and Utah? Why weren't they given the same types of favors, even though they were diligent and not overextending themselves, like what happened with the TARP bailouts? So that doesn't mean that they should be punished because they have poured out trillions of dollars to these poorly managed companies. And first off, the reality is that the federal government doesn't have the ability to just hand out money because they're too big to fail. They needed to fail. And that would have been the best thing for America. It would have been best that we allowed farmers to fail. They have to. Failure is integral in growing and strengthening. It's the same thing with lifting weights. When you try to advance and all of a sudden you can't do the same amount of reps or even move the bar, okay, you failed. Well, you go back to the amount of weight that you can and you work your way up so you succeed. Failure is the necessity of success. And I think most people embrace these thoughts. But the fact of the matter is that the federal government doesn't have the ability to just support those who want support based on the need of support instead of based on the uniformity of what it can do for one and what it can do for another. And so they started diverting from the uniformity clause very quickly when these paradigms started shifting. So let me go on. There is no necessary connection between it and the system of appropriations. On the contrary, it appears to me that the supposition of their dependence upon each other is calculated to excite the prejudices of the public against both. The former is sustained on the grounds of its consistency with the letter and spirit of the Constitution, of its origin being traced to the assent of all parties to the original compact. Now, who are the parties? He doesn't spell that out. He doesn't spell out who the parties are. The parties are the states, not the people. And so he talks about if the people desire and so forth, but when he goes to the Constitution, now he's talking about the states, but he doesn't specify that. And I think most people are going to lose that when they read this. And of its having the support and approbation of the majority of the people. See right there, he's talking about the people. So he is not in sync with the paradigm of the Constitution as it was explained to the states. But I'm going on, and let me just cut this off. We'll be right back to close this out when we come back from the break. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, this is the last two paragraphs of this very long-winded veto message to Congress from President Jackson in 1830. As long as the encouragement of domestic manufacturers is directed to national ends, it shall receive from me a temperate but steady support. There is no necessary connection between it and the system of appropriations. On the contrary, it appears to me that the supposition of their dependence upon each other is calculated to excite the prejudices of the public against both. The former is sustained on the grounds of its consistency with the letter and spirit of the Constitution, of its origin being traced to the assents of all the parties of the original compact, and of its having the support and approbation of a majority of the people, on which account it is at least entitled to a fair experiment. Excuse me. Clearly, he is mixing the parties and the people, because even though it starts off with we the people, it is a preamble for the Constitution. Article 7 clearly identifies that the states are the ones to have buy-in. Of course, it's the people that send their sovereigns to the states to represent them. It's the same thing with Article 5. To change or amend the Constitution, it requires a measure of states. And if you take the 38 least populated states, and as a matter of fact, you know, this is such a brilliant idea, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the population of the least, and you can hear me typing, the least populated states to the most, and I'm going to take the 13 most, in other words, yeah, the 13th most populated states versus the 38 least populated states to see how that, how this republic is dominated by a minority. Because if you add the most populated states, so like I said, I'm going to stack them up. I'm going to present you this data so that you can see that our concept is not about the people. It's about the states and the republic. They didn't create a system that required the majority of the people. No, the majority of the people in each state. So when you hear these polls, oh, you know, there's 40% of the people out there that are, you know, predestined to. Well, where did they take those polls? They took those polls in blue states. What is the percentage in the red states, the dark red states? 5%, 10%. It is not the same. And there are huge disparate paradigms between what some people call the flyover states, excuse me, the flyover states versus these heavily populated coastal states. Okay, so I'm going to do this as a little side as I present this information, because where are these kids coming into the electorate? They're coming into the electorate. The majority of them all are coming into the electorate in the blue states. Now, they are moving, but if you start looking and breaking down the demographics by states, you will find that it is the blue states that have a preponderance of illegal immigrants who are all voting for the communist socialism. And if you look at those who are in the school systems, you will find that it is, you know, the majority of them are in the blue states as well. Anyway, let me move on. The suggestions to which I have alluded refer to a forced continuance of the national debt by means of large appropriations as a substitute for the security which the system derives from the principles on which it has hitherto been sustained. Such a course would certainly indicate either an unreasonable distrust of the people or a consciousness that the system does not possess sufficient soundness for its support if left to their voluntary choice and to its own merits. Those who suppose that any policy thus rounded can be long upheld in this country have looked upon its history with eyes very different from mine. This policy, like every other, must abide the will of the people, who will not be likely to allow any device, however specious, to conceal its character and tendency. Now, the specious that he's using is hollow. I think it's a misspelling, but it is an arcane spelling of spacious, because it is actually, you know, like I said, hollow, erroneous, baseless, or what have you. Anyway, in presenting these opinions, I have spoken with the freedom and candor which I thought the occasion for their expression called for, and now respectfully return the bill which has been under consideration for your deliberation and judgment. So, bottom line, you know, they have to decide whether, Congress has to decide whether they want to amend the Constitution and appeal to the states. What was the holdup? I mean, Madison really wanted this to happen. And as a matter of fact, I'm not opposed to this kind of happening, other than the spirit of the Constitution was outward facing. It was not to be anything domestic. And as they started looking, they knew they were restrained. Madison knew that there were no enumerated powers for the federal government to really manage things within the domestic issues of the states. That the states were responsible for creating their own roadways. Now, bottom line, yeah, the states can all come together, but here's the thing. Even under the understanding of application, when California and some of these other states that have large economies say, we want to create more roads, well, yeah, you have the money to do that. Go ahead. But if you want to create roads which will allow your commerce to flow out to these other states, then you have to be willing to help share the burden in developing these other states. So this is where, in my first book, I talk about this. What really should happen is, instead of creating a Department of Transportation, the states should, as they come together, instead of making an amendment to the Constitution, they should come up with an infrastructure committee or a Congress or whatever you want to call it, to where they absolutely have this the authority and sovereignty coalesced into this body to start coming up with strategic concepts of infrastructure. How is it that everybody is going to be online? How is it that everybody is going to be on the road? How is it that everybody will have access to reasonable transportations of different kinds? If you start looking, the money just isn't there in these small states, but that's just because the resources haven't been developed. Now, if the big states want to make sure that they can get all their products out to these, you know, these few resources in the hinterland or in the flyover states, then they need to do a better job in supporting the development of those other states so that their commerce and their people will be blessed. It's all about working together in a mutually benefiting way. It's called symbiosis, right? So here is the problem. Even though Andrew Jackson did the right thing, he did it for a lot of the wrong reasons. He was looking, and clearly, as you go through this, he looks at the Constitutional Republic more as a democracy, as the we the people, than the sovereign states, and that the sovereign states have, obviously he forgot about the 10th Amendment, that those things that have not been specifically delegated are left to the states. Oh, well, because we've been spending money and doing it, you know, and been able to, other administrations have kind of done this and gotten away with it. Well, you know, maybe we should look at the precedents been set and that we should go down this path of, and I'm going, you got to be kidding me. I mean, that's like saying, I'm your employer and, you know, I'm going to do you a real favor. I'm going to, instead of paying you in cash, I'm going to pay you in gold and you're going to actually receive physical gold and we're going to provide you the services so that if you want to liquidate that gold into dollars and get it out of the commodity side of, you know, our finance, then you're more than welcome to do that. And everybody that works at my company would be probably thrilled to death, because if they're saving their money and they watch the commodities and they see gold going up, they're going to let it sit and ride in the gold commodities and then take it out of the gold commodities. In other words, cash it in for dollars when they think that it's peaked. And then they've made actually more money with the money that they've made from my company. And they'll be none the wiser to the next turn, because a couple of years down the road, because we live in tomato country, and because let's say we live in wheat country, and we live in Kansas, and or wherever, you know, wheat is prominent, like Washington. And so what'll end up happening is they'll say, well, instead of paying you in gold, we're going to move from gold to a different commodity. We're going to pay in wheat. How would you like that? It's about compliance to the Constitution. It's compliance to the contract. We'll expound on this more. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.